tired of the killing. It has to stop. We're gonna drive gun violence out of our neighborhood.
It traumatizes us. When you constantly seeing death, you really don't care.
Black men don't come up and just say I'm evil. It got to be you did something to me.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark scores with you, and what you were hearing is part of the documentary of Catching Bullets, and it's an incredibly moving story. And right now, we're honored to welcome in Darren Seals, who is a community leader with the Sankofa Unity Center, and this documentary chronicles Darren's life, and he joins us this morning. Darren, thank you so much.
Yes, glad to have you.
And your documentary, want to let people know, it premieres August 14th in Pagedale at the 24-1 Theater, and it will be in there at least for several weeks,
yes,
right,
yes.
On August 14th.
If we pack it, it might be in there an extra 2 months, something like that. Okay. But Friday, it shows on Tubi.
All right.
So the idea behind the documentary, where did it start, and did it turn into what it was supposed to turn into when you started it?
When we first started, it was just, I wanted to have some footage about me, the way I mentor. I mentor differently. I mentor like, hey, like your grandmom, you say, don't touch that stove, it's hot. So that's how I mentor. So, you know, like my mentor taught me to say, listen. So I was trying to get these kids, a group of kids, listen. So the first batch, they went back into the streets. But this other batch came in, it was something about Tink. Tink was a different type of kid. He was a kid that I saw that he wanted it. He wanted success, but he wanted it from a different type of way. So he was like right on the edge of the fence.
And Tink was one of the kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tink, one of the main characters.
We were talking before we came back just now, just during the commercial break, and you were saying, you know, years ago in St. Louis, you know, kids were playing outside. They were playing ball. They were playing hide and seek. You don't see that as much anymore, and how you want to continue to push the city forward. You want to change lives. Can you kind of set the table on what motivated you to do that?
Well, you know, I got tired. And, you know, I don't have my story. You can look on YouTube and everything. Once a man get, you know, that the end might happen, all my friends was passing away. So I was like, nah. Then I go to a funeral and somebody be, well, he did this, he did that. And I'm like, no, I want to tell my own story. So I started writing. And so I always want somebody, like I wrote a book, it's called Revelations of a Hustler. I wrote that in 1998. So that was my obituary. So I said, I don't want nobody telling my story. And then my mom used to always say, get up out the streets. But she didn't understand. I was part of something that was bigger than what she can say. She can tell me to get out the streets. I'm like, no, I'm making money. I'm having fun. The rush. And so I got tired, and I walked up in a church that I bought, turned to a youth center, and dropped my bulletproof vest and my gun at the altar, and never looked back.
Was that hard for you to do? Because you've got friends and people that are, you know, your peers, and they're all involved. So was it difficult for you to say, I'm not going to do that anymore?
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, when you walk away from something, it's an image you got to uphold, and if that image is more like you become a trophy, right, John? It's like a trophy where, he got his guards down. I can get clout if I come at him. You know, so I was like, I really didn't care because my mom told me, bury me, don't let me bury you. So that stuck to my heart. And so when I finally walked away, I didn't owe nobody nothing. I just wanted peace. And it's kind of hard to get peace when you surrounded by the crime. You know, I call it the dinner table among thieves. That's the one important. And that's probably one of the craziest neighborhoods you ever can grow up in.
Yeah, you tell that story, as you mentioned, putting your gun and bulletproof vest down because you had like made a name for yourself in Walnut Park, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm not going to live this life anymore. How do you just have that sudden transformation? Okay. I mean, that's a 180 going the opposite direction.
Okay, probably like 2 weeks before then, I was getting shot at back and forth. Like every time I come out the house, I had to carry a gun. So you got to understand, me playing softball for rec, I used to have on a bulletproof vest and go up to bat with a gun on my side. Wow. That's no way to live. So a couple of times, I was like, man, he almost got me. then I go to my mom and have me and my mom just have these deep conversations. You always say the Lord got a special calling for you. And I'm like, hey, Mom, but if it's a God, I'm keep getting shot. You know, you're talking about 13 bullets. You know, so I was escaping, but then Ted Foster, he said either you're gonna walk in or they're gonna roll you in. And that stuck with me too. So I wasn't a kid that didn't listen. You know, like John will tell you, I always listen to anybody that been there in the game that know, you know, you gotta look at this man been in locked up for what, 20?
30 years.
And he come home because he met me through somebody else. And when he came home, he saw me want to change. So he was like, well, I'm gonna help out. So he started coming around. I said, man, can you mentor me? Because he knew what I was facing. He knew the trials and tribulations that's going to be ahead, judgment, how people going to look at me and say, you know what? Enough is enough. So
is what the community needs, and in particular young people, is it more mentors? Is it more people like you? Or is it something beyond that?
It's something beyond that. I'm just a small part to it. It's more like if you get a kid and he has no father figure, but every day he sees a guy shooting dice, he sees all the excitement in the neighborhood, that's not coming to the eye and say, don't do that. That's like a video game now. That's why they got, what's the video game where they shooting and all this other stuff?
Call of Duty.
Yeah, Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So now, let's say that's in Warner Park. The Call of Duty is not the shooting, it's the excitement. These little kids getting behind a rush and not saying that this is it. It's no reset button. Like on the game, you get reset. It's no reset on this. So if you don't have nobody coming saying, stop, go this route, then ain't nobody telling because the father's out of the household. Mom working 2-3 jobs. I'm at work. I mean, like I'm speaking as a mom. Mom, I'm at work from 5 o'clock to 11 o'clock. That kid going to that rush, it's a magnet that it's like me. I was trying to build a name.
Nowhere else for him to go.
Right. No, it's no youth centers over there. It's no, like Matthew Dickey there, but we couldn't go to Matthew Dickey. So now these days, they build one on West Florissant. They still can't go over there now. So they trapped in a zone where if getting shot is more like a diploma, a degree. You know, I've been shot. No, they don't understand getting shot like me. I pay for it every day.
Is it, like you said, like a degree? Is it a sense of belonging, in a sense?
Like you've earned something?
Yeah. It's more like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
We believe, coming up in our neighborhoods, that our way to manhood is through violence. We have to prove that we're tough. We're the bad guy. That makes us a man.
And John, and I don't want to talk out of school, you said you were incarcerated?
30 years. I did 30 calendar years in federal prison.
And then how did you meet Darren?
I heard about Darren. I've been back here 9 years, okay? And I heard about his program and what he was doing. He's like a godsend. He's what we need. We're products of our environment. If we're taught to make a living a certain way, such as maybe gambling, robbing, selling drugs, those are the things that we pursue. If we're taught we can become lawyers, doctors, we'll pursue that also. And we have to see examples of those successes. So we're basically, I'm a statistic. My son is a statistic. We're not bad people. We're not inherently bad. We made all the wrong choices because we didn't see the right ones.
Right. And we've left with that.
So, because I mean, you'll have people listening to what you're saying, and they'll just say, "Well, you know what? Don't live that life. Just don't do that. Why is it not that easy? Why is it not that easy to just not live like that?"
It's an ultimate rush. If you've never been in it, you couldn't understand it. Do I go to work to make minimum wages? Or do I go on a block and make me $2,000-$4,000 a night? So it's more like I'm the man. So it's basically like one drug dealer get killed, the next one got to step up, and then the next one step up. So it's like I want to be something I have no understanding of. I always use the example, Scarface is probably one of the number one movies America will ever make. But I watched it over 10,000 times. But what happened to him at the end of the movie? He get killed. I wanted to be Scarface. Everybody loved the story about Scarface, but forget, dummy, he got killed at the end of the movie. So with that being said, I wanted my story to end different from that. I wanted to give back. So Sankofa means you have to go back to the beginning. So I had stopped. I went back to the beginning. What made me want to do this? My father worked at McDonald's Douglas. My mother worked at Southwestern Bell. I never wanted for nothing. Why did I go that route? So I started knowing it's the community. So as I got deeper off into my mentor, it's not about somebody just hustling and selling drugs. It was the trauma. Trauma hits in every household. And once that trauma hit in every household, because every kid come to me, it's a problem. Like I said in the beginning of the film, we just don't go out and create violence.
It becomes a way of life.
Right. I never went out and say, give it up. I never did that. You more like, man, I'm hungry. I got to eat. I ain't got no shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine a kid coming to school with holes in the shoes. What's going to happen? They're going to talk about them. They're going to dog them out. They're going to bully them. So you mean somebody get 2-3 pairs of shoes hustling? Then there it go. So once you get a taste of it, but.
We were talking to a guest we've had before who looks at a violent crime and said that kids who grow up in neighborhoods with a lot of violent crime have higher rates of PTSD than returning veterans of war.
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. That's true.
And how that just changes who you are or what you think your trajectory will be until someone like a mentor can help pull you out of it. Like, do you need help being pulled out of that mentality? Or
all you need to do is understand it.
Yeah.
And usually experience helps you understand it. Until you had the experience, it's all a fantasy. It's all glory.
I know in the Catching Bullets documentary, the story also follows Preston, who's the 18-year-old son of your late friend.
Mm-hmm.
What is your relationship with Preston, and what does that story follow?
Well, Preston came to me, and I fell in love with him the first time I met him. And then I kept telling him, I said, man, I'm doing a documentary about my life. I want you to play it because we kind of favored each other. We kind of favored each other coming up. Then he had the heart. He wanted it so bad. I'm like, man, you like me? Because, you know, couldn't tell him nothing. But he wasn't a bad kid. Preston was the type of kid where you can adopt him and say, okay, he did understand. But I always say God give you two things. He give you a choice and a chance. It was just he wanted a different life real quick. Same as me. He got addicted to it. Not that he messed with any drugs. Addiction meaning I want to have a better life. And like he said, if he's sitting right there, I ain't got no choice to try to get it. If I moved in Chesterfield, you would be talking about I got a PhD.
Yeah.
I'd be a lawyer right now. I'd be a professional baseball player. But when you're in the neighborhood that's surrounded by violence, then it attracts you. And it's the ultimate track where what is a man to gain the whole world just to lose his soul? But if you know tomorrow is not promised, if a kid get taught like he teaches me, you got to look at reality and you got to reach out and try to go get it. Why do we got to lose so many young men? Because nobody understands. We get 1,000 organizations. So now I start figuring out when Ben approached me, I was like, you think you can change this to a movie? He's like, I don't know. Let's just shoot for it. I wanted this to be a success story with Tink. He was in the bottom of the gutter. And now I was pushing him to be greatness. But it flipped. And so now we had to come another route. But it's like a mother's at that front row is the worst nightmare. And I try to tell every kid, and through the movie, I want you to understand that what you want, you ain't got to have. You have to work hard for it. And the name, I don't know how we came up with the name, I guess by me being shot up and being just say Catching Bullets. I'm like, whoa, that's a name. So now we getting ready for Catching Bullets, the Revelations. So that's going to be about strictly my life.
Catching Bullets is premiering August 14th at 7 o'clock at 24-1 Theater in Pagedale. So at least a couple of weeks it'll be there, maybe longer, depending on how it goes. Are you hoping that it gets distributed more than... Is it just going to be at this theater to start, and then hopefully other platforms people can see it?
I think other platforms, they're going to grab it up, because it's an interesting... Yeah. Story. If you saw the plot of it, it's an interesting story where the hero is a different type of hero. Even though they look at me as the hero, I'm in that part too. But when they told me that Tubi wanted it,
yeah,
I'm like, whoa, that's big.
Yeah,
you know, I can just sit back at the TV and push a button and yeah. I see myself.
People can see it for free then, right? If it's on Tubi,
right.
Isn't that right?
They can see it for free, yeah. But it's nothing like the premiere.
You know, right.
And the support. I think a lot of folks.
Yeah, you want to do the support.
A lot of folks should come out so we can push it to other neighborhoods. You know, I'm tired of when I hear people talking about, well, my son, he in college, it ain't going to happen to him. But that shooter might hurt your grandbaby 10 years from now.
Right.
So it's like smallpox. Smallpox went. So somebody came over with a vaccination. Now, we don't worry about smallpox, right? But it's still here.
Yeah.
Just a different name. So violence in a different name is going to keep coming.
Darren, John, we appreciate the two of you guys coming in. Thank you for talking about this with us. And we encourage everybody to go. August 14th is the premiere, 7 o'clock, 24-1 Theater in Pagedale. It's called Catching Bullets,
documentary
featuring Darren Seals. Thank you for coming in and telling us about it.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.
It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
I'm a little overwhelmed. Ranj, it was such an incredible conversation with Darren Seals. His movie Catching Bullets premieres August 14th at 7 p.m. at the 24-1 Theater in Pagedale, Missouri. We'll be there, it sounds like, at least a month.
Yeah.
But you want to get there, help support them. And we were talking off air as well. It's an incredible life that he's had, the work that he is doing to change lives. He mentioned he's a chapter in Governor Mike Kehoe's book. They're
That's
buds.
Right. Yeah, he referenced Governor Kehoe. We had Shamim Clark Hubbard, alderwoman, who messaged into the show. Mm-hmm. She's watching on YouTube and said he is absolutely a godsend in reaching the ones that that others can't. And I mean, it's there has to be investment in parts of the city that have been forgotten for mm-hmm. a very long time, and we can't do that because, as it has proven, and it's not just here in St. Louis, it's everywhere, the crime that ultimately comes from places like that or originates there, it doesn't just stay there. It ends up affecting everybody in the city. So we need to invest in those areas.
Yeah.
And there isn't enough investment. But the lesson that I think all of us can learn from Darren and from John being in here is the vast majority of folks who live in those neighborhoods, they want better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want better than what's happening and what they see when they step outside.
I'm going to go back and listen to the interview, honestly, because re-listen to it, because there was so much in what Darren said and about his experiences and the way kids growing up in, you know, a violent neighborhood, a violent environment, the way they view the world and how they're trying to survive. He also, I mentioned Governor Mike Kehoe. He mentioned the great work that James Clark and Michael McMillan are doing at the Urban League.
Yep.
And how he's tied in and I hope this absolutely just catches fire, just blows up.
Yeah, I would love to see it.
Yeah, to see so many people know him and his story.
Documentary is called Catching Bullets. Wow. And if you want to go to the theater to see it, you can support them by going physically to see it. August 14th, 7 o'clock, 24-1 Theater in Pagedale. And it's there for a couple of weeks. He's hoping that it could be extended for several weeks after that. And then hopefully it does end up on platforms where people can watch it anywhere. Catching Bullets is what it's called. It's Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji. We appreciate you being with us today on 104.1 FM KMOX.
At Chris Amy KMOX on Twitter, you will find our question of the week. pinned there right up top. Do you leave your AC fan on constantly, or do you turn it off? Because I know that there are different theories, like no matter what you
say. About what costs less, like, right? What ends up...
I honestly don't know.
I think it's... Well, I think that's it. It's like, what's more efficient for keeping your place cool when it's really hot outside? Is it... Leave it on all the time.
See, I didn't think it was cost. I thought it was what's harder on your AC.
Well, that's
completely shutting off and on, like the machine itself versus like your bill. Because they said the bill is more expensive because the fan's constantly running.
Right.
Which is not a cost theory.
But that is part of cost. If your AC is working harder, then that means it's going to cost you more.
See, I didn't know. I just thought it was about the turning on and off.
Some people think that it works harder when you do turn it on and off because it takes more work to get it back down to the temperature you want it.
Which has cost implications.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're saying even if you like set it at 72? I thought it was you're not supposed to set your... You shouldn't keep your apartment at 80 during the day because when you come home and turn it down, it has to work too hard.
Yeah. Right.
But what I'm saying is if you set it at 72 and keep the fan on all the time, if I didn't keep the fan on, but I kept it at 72, it would still be working harder. I don't know.
That's what we don't know. I think that's the question we asked, right? Which is better? Which is more efficient?
The question of the week is for you guys to answer our question.
Yes, you're trying to help us out here.
The next question of the week is, what should I do?
This is not
my Subaru sounds like this.
Your car sounds like a diesel.
It does.
It's like a tiny SUV. But that's the question, is we're trying to figure out what you do, what you think keeps costs down for you and prevents your AC from working too hard.
One of my friends, and again, this is why I don't know what I'm doing, but one of my friends said, she goes, yeah, we keep the fan on. It makes our electric bill higher, but it's not as hard on the AC.
What the hell does that mean?
Because you have to turns off and on, like turning your car on and off and on and off.
Okay.
I don't know.
So they think it lasts longer before they have to get a new one?
I don't know. I don't know anything about anything that's practical.
Okay.
You want me to recite a soliloquy from Shakespeare? Yeah. Do I know how to fix my car? I'm worthless. I'm worthless.
Our guy, Colonel Ripper, watching on YouTube, says the fan does not cost much to go on and off. The AC compressor is a big drain when it goes on. But, he says, it is better to have the AC off for a while than to run it continuously. And
well,
he also says your
bad.
Friend, Amy, is full of baloney.
Well, now I feel bad because through the hottest month, I've had my AC fan on.
Wow, no. That's probably why it costs you so much. See? I tried telling you.
Hey, in a lot of, most of Europe, they don't have air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And one reason is because when you look at the latitude of Europe, it's way up there.
It's
northern Minnesota. Yeah. So Europeans look down on Americans for needing AC. Well, Europeans don't have Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi. Heck, they don't even have Missouri, right? It's further north. The weather's not that bad. Now, has it been getting hotter? Absolutely. Here's what blows my mind, because you know how in France with the Olympics, they were trying to do no ACs in the athletes' rooms and the rooms, or at least they were keeping it at 78. And the athletes said, absolutely not. Some of them brought their own ACs. It was insane to the Olympic Village. They literally bought window units and all that, brought their own ACs because they're trying to be environmentally friendly. I just learned that a lot more people die in Europe from heat-related deaths than die in the United States from guns. Now, you're looking at more people in the EU, right, than you are the US, but 175,000 people a year, this is according to the UN, die in the EU from heat-related deaths.
Because they're just trying to tough it out?
Shouldn't they get air conditioning? Shouldn't they say that, you know what, AC is not an American abomination. AC, air conditioning, is not American consumerism and us being babies. I think they should start focusing on AC in Europe because that number seems really high.
Well,
and I Googled, and this seems really low, that like a couple thousand heat-related deaths in the United States each year. It said between 1,300 and 2,300.
That seems like a lot, I think.
It seems like a lot, sorry. But yeah, compared to 175,000,
I
was like, well, what is it in the U.S.? But it does seem like a lot, but it says 1,300 to 2,300. They're not sure. Heat-related deaths.
But overall,
why does Europe
there
not get AC? 175,000. I still don't know that I believe this number. And like I said, I heard it from a reliable source, but then I looked and the UN, that's what they're saying. And you could say, well, the UN's lying. And I agree, the UN's not perfect. But that number, that'd be a weird number for them to make up.
Well, it probably is real.
Isn't that shocking? Isn't that shocking?
Little.
That's a really high number,
Ron. But even with that, isn't their life expectancy better than ours?
I don't know.
I think it is.
And they smoke cigarettes in Europe.
And drink the wine.
Well, wine's fine. Well, wine and coffee is good for you. I don't know.
Coffee is really good for you.
I wonder when Europe is going to change its mentality and start accepting AC. Because here's the thing. It's a little backwards to me to poo-poo AC, to poo-poo air conditioning as an American indulgence when, listen, life was tough. And we're drinking clean water. We've made medical advancements. We can grow more food. All of these things have helped us live longer. I don't know why Europeans don't group air conditioning in one of those categories of modern advancement that helps save lives.
Well, again, most countries in Europe have a better life expectancy than we have.
So you know, where's so this number? Who are these
people? I don't know.
Are they old people?
like Switzerland, Italy, Spain, Norway, France, Sweden, they all have a better life expectancy than us.
I don't know.
Ireland, Netherlands, Belgium, Denmark, Finland, Greece, Germany, the UK.
Well, I will say this. They are overall, they are healthier.
Czech Republic.
Yeah. I mean, people have called it an obesity epidemic or whatever, but we do know that with obesity comes other comorbidities that are really, really hard on your heart. Diabetes is dangerous. All of these things that come with that, which I'm sure that does not help our life expectancy.
Imagine if they end up adopting air conditioning widespread over there.
They're going to live forever.
They're going to live to be 110 in Europe.
Maybe right? That's why they don't have it. They're like, you guys are fine. You're living long, healthy lives. You don't need AC. Would you like to hear something really random? I actually feel weird now saying it out
loud.
Love
to hear it. Go ahead.
So while I was doing my tour this morning of Kirkwood, Webster, Crestwood,
yep, right,
Oakland, where else did we go? Glendale. I don't know. All of the whole area. I was running and my running buddy goes, see that apartment building right there? I'm like, yeah. He goes, that's where Sean Hornbeck was kept for 4 years. And it just blew my mind because I knew, you know, a big part of the story is that he was taken and kind of kept, quote, or unquote, in plain sight. But he was in this apartment building in Kirkwood. And it was a huge, huge national story and scandal. And he was 11 years old when he was kidnapped by Michael Devlin in 2002. And Michael Devlin kidnapped another kid the week before they found both boys. And Sean Hornbeck said he remembers thinking when this horrible person showed up with another kid, a 13-year-old, he thought, well, my days are numbered. Like he thought that Devlin was going to kill him or get rid of him. And as it turned out, the reason why the cops found where Sean Hornbeck was, they were responding to something else that was random at that apartment complex, and they noticed a truck that fit the description of the truck that was near Sean Hornbeck's house or whatever when he was kidnapped. They said that was really the only clue in the case was that truck. They had a description of the truck. That's all they had. And they found the boys at that apartment complex.
That's just wild. Absolutely.
Worked at a pizza place. Emos.
Oh my God. Did you say Emos?
He did. I think he worked at Emos.
Why? You can say that.
I know it always feels weird.
You can. Why? It's where it happened.
I know. But there was a story in
the
New
York.
It's
not like Emos is responsible for it. Don't say that. Well, they're not. They didn't kidnap him. It's just a pizza place.
I know. It's not funny. Don't say that. You're making me uncomfortable. But there was a story in the New York Times in 2007. And it was like soul searching by Missouri suspects' neighbors, because the neighbors were all saying, I can't believe we lived, you know, above this guy or right next to him. And this was happening. And some of them saw Sean and said, we just thought he was a family member.
Man.
Like, we didn't know.
How about, I did not remember this story
at all. I was going to let you bring this up because this is so insane to me. So my friend said that I was, for a long time, the only person in the entire world that didn't know how The Sixth Sense ended. Didn't know what the plot twist was.
Yes, it was Bruce Willis the entire time.
Yes, that I didn't know what the plot twist was. You've got to be the only person in this country of this age group who's not in Gen Z, right? Just of a millennial and older who does not know this story.
So maybe
it was on 48 Hours.
Okay, maybe I had heard about it. I had moved town. I had moved out of this area literally 2 or 3 days before that all happened. So I guess I was going through the process of a move to a different, different city. I just don't remember it.
This
did not really sound
NBC
familiar
News,
to me.
No. CBS 48 Hours.
I remember Elizabeth Smart.
This was very much, it was like that type of thing.
I just don't know. It sounds vaguely familiar.
I will say this. He took the air out of my tires this morning.
I'm so sorry.
Got in this morning. I said, oh my gosh, this is so random, you guys. But guess where I just ran by? And he has like, I don't know who that is. Now, granted, it's in the middle of like a pretty busy area. So there are a lot of listeners who say, yeah, we drive by there every day. I just hadn't. It was weird to me. It'd be like walking by a house and saying that's where Elizabeth Smart was. It's weird.
That's fascinating. I mean that truly. I just do not remember this very much at all. Amy, we need to follow up on the St. Louis conversation that we were having yesterday.
Yep.
About your love hate with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do that when we come back, because we've been asking people if they have a love hate relationship with being in St. Louis, living here. And how you feel about it. We got a follow-up to that when we come back on KMOX. We had that conversation yesterday about whether or not you love, hate St. Louis. You have both feelings. Which one dominates? And why you have those feelings. And multiple people have chimed in regarding it on our text line, 314-436-7900. And it's a good question because I kind of have it in a way.
Well,
I do love it here.
You have it. But I think, like I said, you with your lifestyle, you libertine, I do think if you're a single person, you're looking for a nightlife, you don't have kids. I mean, a lot shuts down in St. Louis County by 10 p.m. and probably in the city, too. There's just a lot that kind of closes up shop. If you are have a family, outdoorsy, like the arts and food and all of that, and in an approachable environment, I think it's the best. It's hard to beat St. Louis.
Well, I mean, I would say that you can have that any city. Every city has suburbs. Every single major city, mid-tier city, they all have suburbs.
But don't you think Chicago, though, it's different because there's Chicago and Chicago suburbs. And yes, there's community, but St. Louis is just so much smaller that it feels more like a small town. Geneva, Illinois is what, an hour outside of Chicago? That has a
something
small
like
town
that.
Feel. That felt like Webster Groves to me.
Right.
But there is something to be said for when the community, I think, might be your best asset, right? The people versus, people come to Chicago for vacation. People like, I want to go to school in Chicago. I want to spend the weekend in Chicago. You don't really get that with St. Louis. We're not a big, sexy city.
Right. But I would say that if you are in like LaGrange in Chicago,
LaGrange,
you have neighbors, you have a community there. People know each other. It's not like you keep to yourself because you live there. And here in St. Louis, everybody's friendly to everybody. It's not really all that different. And I would imagine in Milwaukee, it's the same. Cincinnati, I don't know that we are totally different than all those other markets.
I would say we're, I would say Midwest markets have a lot in common.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Midwest markets have a lot in common, and that's why I'm jealous that we're not Indianapolis. We should be Indianapolis, but I'm also glad we're not Omaha, because like they don't have any pro teams. We have, I mean, when we had the NFL run, we were a Midwest, you know, mid-market with the Rams and the Cardinals and the Blues. You have the three of the four major leagues. That's insane. And if you're from Oklahoma City, you don't have that. If you're from Tulsa, you don't have that. So in that sense, St. Louis had some big city benefits.
I've lost the text message. I can't find it.
I told you not to lose it.
There was a, here we go. It's right here. Chris and Amy, I have frequently heard you refer to Omaha, typically in a disparaging way. I grew up in Omaha. Have either of you been to Omaha recently? They have a world-class zoo. But is it free?
Is it free?
Warren Buffett enjoys the restaurants. Check out Boys Town and the SAC Air Museum. Maybe St. Louis could learn how to revitalize a downtown and old warehouse district from Omaha.
They might. But imagine
so I've been to Omaha twice. I went there the last time probably about 5 years ago. 6 years ago, I guess. So I like it. It's just
This is why I brought it up. If you're in Omaha and you want to go to an NHL game, you can't. Or an MLB game, you can't. And now an NFL game either, we can't either. But for a while, that's what I'm saying. Imagine if Omaha had a Major League Baseball team and a National Hockey League team and then an NFL team. For a while, that's pretty impressive for, you know, our down home St. Louis. I can say I can use Wichita instead of Omaha if it makes you feel better.
So last night I'm in Central West End and it's probably, I don't know, 8, 9, something like that. And right outside the Whole Foods at Euclid and Pine. There's a guy, and I'm assuming he was intoxicated, and he's just sort of walking around in circles, crossing the street, going back and forth, just
as one does on a Monday night.
And he's yelling. He's just yelling.
A lot of yellers.
Yelling. Yeah. And he's yelling about St. Louis. and it isn't funny.
He was yelling about St. Louis.
Hold on. If clearly something was going on with this fella.
Yeah.
Drunk, maybe a mental disorder of some kind. But he yells, I am in hell, and guess where hell is? St. Louis, Missouri. I don't know what he was yelling. He's like, screw this city.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Man, I don't know what he was going
through.
So he was
walking around in circles yelling that?
Yes, I am in hell, and guess where hell is?
That's so mean. I feel defensive.
I'm so sorry, man. Well, he lived here, so he can do it.
Well, why didn't you
That's
get
our rule.
Your
That's our rule,
phone?
Right?
Why didn't you get your phone out
well, because
and
I
get
don't
some
wanna,
audio?
Well, because I didn't want to, you know, bust the poor guy out.
Oh,
he was going through something, I'm sure.
He was going through it. Okay, so it wasn't like
I guess,
you were going to conduct an interview with him?
I was not going to conduct an interview with him.
Did he have pants on?
He did have pants on. He had shorts. Yeah.
How short were they?
Probably like cargos. So they weren't, you know, hugging the plums. He was just a regular guy having a hard time. Are we done? Amy? Sorry. Are we done?
Yes.
Should we go?
Is that going to be the name of your bar?
Hugging the plums.
Plum huggers. Bar.
No. That's good. That's going
Maybe
to
that's
be.
Maybe that's your nice package delivery service.
Yeah. My nice package delivery, sir. All right, that's it for us. Big show coming up. Gas House Gang at 12 o'clock. Ollie Marmel is on the show for the first half hour. Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman, and me going to be with you here momentarily. Thank you for listening. Podcast available wherever you get your podcast. But you should really download the Odyssey app so you can listen to KMOX live. Have a great rest of your day. Amy and I back tomorrow at 9 o'clock on 104.1 FM KMOX.